Welcome, everyone, to the Hecate's Doorway podcast.
Welcome. I wasn't just dying a minute ago. I'm not dying.
We'll try to edit out all your coughs. My name is Brandon, and Mr. Coffer over there is Gabe, of course, as always.
How's it going? I'm back from being in the desert for a month.
Yeah, we didn't really address that last episode. Gabe's been gone for a whole month.
Yeah.
All the episodes that we put out were pre-recorded, so.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've been back. Yeah. And boy, am I glad to be back. Holy shit, was it hot out there.
Yeah, the Mojave Desert. Who wouldn't want to be there? So, this is going to be part two of Richard Chase. And as I hinted at many times last episode, this is going to be the one that's not fun.
Not fun.
No, this is going to be terrible.
For many reasons that we're going to get into.
Oh, yeah. And I guess I'll do it now. Just a little thing in the beginning.
Yeah, good idea.
So we are going to get into some very, very gruesome details. We're going to be describing the method of murder of a couple victims. This is the first time we've ever really had this. I just want to say, the things we're going to say, we are not saying for sensationalism or shock value or edge or anything like that.
Yeah.
We are going to describe this because it is important. It is important to fully disclose what happened. You know, it's like it or not, true crime is history.
Yep.
And you should never gloss over history, no matter how gruesome or horrible, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
It paints the people we talk about in a different picture when you just say they murdered someone as opposed to how they murdered someone. You know, these people aren't devious masterminds. They're not boogeymen, but they're not good people. They're terrible people. And to know how terrible they are, you need to know what they did.
Yeah, of course. Otherwise, you can... people won't try to romanticize them, as a lot of people have with a bunch of other serial killers.
Yes. I firmly believe that the amount of, like, documentaries and things that really just gloss over the actual murders are at least partially responsible for the romanticization of these people. So, yeah. With that out of the way, be warned. This is... ding, 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 a gold star episode.
Yay.
Yeah, this is the
actually, no, wait, not yay. Wait.
Not, if you make it through this, you get a gold star. if you want a gold star, listen to the end. You get a gold star.
Have a wall like SpongeBob.
Yeah, you'll be just like SpongeBob. Okay, well, with that little bit of crap out of the way.
Before we... once we get into it, and we're about to describe... for those of you that want a warning... we'll just say, like, hey, this is where stuff gets really messed up.
Gold star time!
If you want to skip ahead, we'll get to, like, a minute or two later in.
Probably, yeah. Just hit that 15-second button until you stop hearing shit. I don't know. I'll just warn you now. You're going to hear some bad shit on this episode.
Yeah.
But I imagine that's what a lot of you are here for, so.
Yeah. So those that can't take it, that still listen to them.
Yeah, you're just going to have to suffer. Alright, so when we last left off, Richard Chase had finally been brought to an institution and medicated for his severe schizophrenia, but unfortunately was released to his parents, who immediately took him off his medication and sent him back to his apartment they'd been renting for him, and everything went back to the way it was before he injected himself with rabbit blood, and as we said... this is when the gold star shit happens, alright? Yep. So get ready. August 3rd, 1977. Tribal police are called to Pyramid Lake, Nevada, as someone had reported an abandoned car in the area. The car in question was a 1966 Ford Ranchero with a bumper sticker that said, "I'd rather be flying."
What?
I don't know. I guess that's important.
Alright, then.
You know, he probably wanted something else on his car, but they didn't have "I'd rather be sucking down blood."
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Upon investigation, they discovered a pile of bloody clothes, two rifles, a 30-30 and a 22, and a little something I actually forgot to mention last episode is he really loved guns, too. Yeah, okay. He loved guns. He loved guns. and he thought the Nazis were after him, and a liver in a bucket full of blood. Soon after, they saw who else but Richard Chase perched on a large rock, naked and soaked in blood. They began to approach him, and immediately he took off, but was quickly apprehended by an officer on an ATV. So he was kind of like the bloody version of the greased up guy from Family Guy.
Damn, that's a...
You can't catch me!
I'm covered in butter.
I'm covered in blood!
No, no.
Yeah, take this as you will. This is probably the last funny thing.
Richard was completely smothered in blood from head to toe, and when the officers questioned him on it, he replied, "It's seeping from me."
It's seeping from me!
Oh no.
That's so God, imagine just grabbing a guy and be like, "Why are you covered in blood?" "It's coming out of me!"
Once the liver was confirmed to be that of a cow, and not human, Richard was released from custody with no charges back into the world. Yeah, that's a fucking mistake.
There's a lot of mistakes here, but I mean, I guess you really can't arrest someone for being weird.
No, but imagine that cat was probably someone's property.
I mean, it probably
was. They would have been too happy.
Probably, but I guess whoever's cat was doesn't know. Because, I mean, if they did, they probably would have pressed charges, obviously.
Though, this is the last time Richard's antics stay in the realm of creepy yet funny and move into the world of murder. Not murder.
Murder.
On December 27th, 1977, at approximately 6:30 p.m., Richard would drive by the house of Dorothy Polinsky in his ranchero and fire his .22 pistol into her house. In an almost unbelievable display of good luck, the bullet passed through the tight bun in her hair, missing her skull by mere inches. Oh, man.
Yeah.
That must have been scary as fuck.
Yeah. Holy shit. Yeah, just right over her fucking head.
I wonder if it's like in the cartoons where it just shaves like that part. Bzz. Quick buzz cut.
Quick buzz cut and a shit of the pants.
Yep. Richard had fired the one shot and drove off. No one had seen Richard at the time of the shooting, so all police had to go on for the time being was the bullet lodged in Dorothy's kitchen cabinet. One hell of a lucky shot for her. She got lucky.
God, I know. Just imagine that. That's insane. It only gets worse from here. Only one day later, Richard was again driving through the streets of Sacramento when he found his next target, 51-year-old Ambrose Griffin. As he was unloading groceries from the trunk of his car, Richard fired two shots as he drove by, and as Ambrose's wife turned around after hearing the shots, he fell to the ground, clutching his chest. His first shot missed, but the second hit him directly in the chest. And once again, no one saw Richard as he sped away. No one but Richard will ever know why he went on this new path of random violence and murder. But it's only going to get worse from here. Chase must have begun to realize that his blood problem was no closer to being solved, and only dove further and further into his own brand of madness. A neighbor of his would claim to have seen him on different occasions. Richard carried two dogs and a cat into his apartment, never to see any of them again. Though at this time, she didn't think it anything to report. And now we slip into some of the worst shit I have ever read, and definitely the worst shit I've ever written.
Just again, as a reminder, we're gonna get into some really fucked up shit here. For those of you that have sensitive,
listener discretion is advised.
Yes, basically. On January 23rd, 1978, Richard would take his second life. His first attempt was a woman named Jean Layton, but like a fuck-up version of Batman, Richard had one rule. His rule for his new outings of murder was simply, if he approached someone's home and the door was locked, he would move on until he found an unlocked door. So by this odd rule, Jean's life was spared. Upon coming to her front door and finding it locked, he did try both her windows and her back door. Though at the back door, he did come face to face with Jean as she stared at him through the window in her back door. Richard stared back emotionless before lighting a cigarette and leaving through her backyard. The next house Richard tried was, however, unlocked, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Remember to always lock your doors and windows.
Lock your fucking doors. Oh my god.
Lock them all. Only 30 minutes later, Richard would try again at the home of Robert and Barbara Edwards. The couple had been away grocery shopping when Richard first entered the home. They would soon return to find him in the home, standing in the hallway as they entered. Robert would chase Richard throughout the house, going room to room until he eventually escaped through the front door. After Richard fled the home, Robert and Barbara searched the home and found what looked like a bag full of the items Richard attempted to steal, including rings, a stethoscope, a tape player, and a decorative dagger. They also found he had pissed all over the baby's clothes and a shat in the baby's crib. After escaping the Edwards home, Richard decided to head to the store and quench his thirst. His regular thirst and not his blood thirst, okay. And after finding an orange soda, he ran into an old schoolmate, Nancy Holden. Approaching her, he decided to start a very awkward bout of small talk. "Were you on a motorcycle when Kurt was killed?" Referring to another schoolmate of theirs who died in a motorcycle accident. Nancy put up with as much as she could before making a break for the parking lot. Richard followed her out to the car and began asking her for a ride. But Nancy quickly jumped in her car and took off as Richard began to reach on her passenger door. Richard would head back to the neighborhood he came from and wandered around until he found the home of Teresa Wallen. We don't know why Richard chose her as his next target. It may have been because he recognized her van from the grocery store parking lot, as she'd been there as well just a short time ago. Or there may have been no reason at all, and this was just random chance. Richard approached the home, pulled out his handgun from his holster, ejected a bullet to leave in her mailbox, and checked the front door to see if it was unlocked. It was. Richard opened the door. As Teresa was on her way out with the bag of garbage, he held up the gun. Teresa dropped the bag and held her hands up in defense as the gun was fired. The bullet entered her palm and exited through her elbow. Richard fired again, hitting the top of her skull as she fell to the ground as Richard fired one more shot into her temple. Richard grabbed her body by the shoulder and dragged her into the bedroom to lay down on the bed. He then went to the kitchen, grabbed the knife and an empty yogurt cup from the pile of spilled garbage and went back into the bedroom. With the knife, he stabbed her body so hard her sternum broke. Then he sliced into her left side of her stomach and reached his hands into the wound, pulling out her intestines. He stabbed her again 8 more times, avoiding the kidneys. He then grabbed an empty yogurt cup, dipped it into her open stomach and filled it to the brim with blood. Bringing the cup to his lips, he drank human blood for the first time in his life. He would refill the cup, and this time, bring it to the bathroom to smear all over his face and hands. Finally, Richard would walk outside to the front yard, grab a pile of dog feces to bring back, and shove it in her mouth. When the autopsy was conducted, it was discovered that Teresa was 3 months pregnant. Damn.
Yeah, let's take a second to... Let's take a second to decompress a second. Yeah, let's just... Deep breaths, everyone. Holy fuck.
Fucking hell. I can see why you, is a gold star.
Oh my god. Okay. Yeah. Y'all good?
I'm sure. I'm sure most of them have heard. Probably worse, if not.
Man, I hope so.
If they're new to this, oh man, I'm sorry.
You're... Oh my god, yeah. Big time apologiosos.
The only clues left at this brutal scene were the bullet Richard had fired, footprints in the pool of her blood, and bloody rings by the body that looked as though they had been left by a large pot or bucket. Nothing to connect police to Richard, as he had only began as one of the most disgusting murder sprees we've seen thus far.
Kind of like the, that's what I was kind of talking about earlier with the bucket and the livery found in his car that was a cow liver.
Yeah.
So he most likely did this to a cow, and then no one knows why.
But he decided to move up in the food chain.
Decided to move on up in the world.
Teresa might have been chosen at random, but Richard had done something odd the day after her murder. In another neighborhood in Sacramento, Richard went door to door asking for issues of Mad Magazine and Cosmopolitan. No one but Richard would ever know the intention of this. He might have had been looking for his next victim. Or this may be something completely unrelated. This did, however, end up in a few people reporting Richard as a suspicious person. The next day, in the same neighborhood, a couple would find something truly horrifying in the backyard. Aww. They found their poor lab shot dead with its stomachs ripped open. When they were asked who might have done this by the police, they were told of an odd smelly man in a dirty orange parka that had been taking two of their puppies home with him just days earlier. This description got the attention of Roy Bondi.
Ray.
Oh, Ray Bondi.
Biondi.
Bondi?
Biondi.
Biondi. The lead investigator in the murder of Teresa Wallen. He had already heard the reports of an odd man asking for magazines in the neighborhood, and hear them describe the same man as interest peaked. They perform an autopsy on the lab, but only got a fragment of a .22 bullet from it. Nothing too definitely linking this to anything. But 2 days later, Richard would perform his final murders.
It's Gold Star time again!
Oof.
And this one is even worse than the last one. So, everyone find your center. Breathe in, breathe out. Because I'm about to fucking ruin it. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
Evelyn Miroth was home with her 6-year-old son, Jason, and her sister-in-law's 20-month-old baby. Danny Meredith had come over to visit, and Evelyn asked if he would help her and rent some snowshoes for her son, Jason, who was going on a play date later that day in the mountains. Danny left, and unfortunately, only carnage would follow. Evelyn ran herself a bath, and as she soaked in her tub, Richard entered the house through the unlocked back door and made his way to the bathroom. He would find Evelyn and shoot her in the head. After hearing the shot, Jason went to investigate up to Evelyn's room, which was connected to the bathroom. Once in her bedroom, Richard would fire 2 shots into Jason. It seemed Richard wanted to repeat what he'd done to Teresa and dragged her body onto the bed and went down to the kitchen for the knife. It was at that time that Danny Meredith returned with the snowshoes. As Danny walked down the hallway, Richard came up to him and shot him between the eyes. A baby's cries began to sound and Richard followed, found the source, put the gun to the baby's head, and fired. Richard came back to Evelyn's body and butchered her just as he done Teresa, though this time he cut off a piece of her liver and ate it as he removed her organs to get to the blood, filling up a bucket to the brim with it. He then rolled over her body, stabbed the anus repeatedly before fucking the wound, turning her back over, slicing the throat, and cutting out an eye. And before leaving the home, he stopped back at the baby's crib and brought the body into the bathroom where he split the head open to remove the brains. It was then that a knock at the front door sounded through the house. Richard waited for the knocking to cease before grabbing the keys to Danny Meredith's car and left the house with the baby's corpse and a bucket of blood.
Fucking hell.
Jesus fucking Christ. Everyone, deep breath.
Yeah.
Let's...
That's fucked up.
I'm sorry. It's even worse when I say it out loud.
Yeah, I imagine.
Okay, well, there's that. But that was the worst of it. It's all smooth sailing from here.
A concerned neighbor came over around 30 minutes later, opened the back door, and saw Danny Meredith's corpse. Upon seeing the corpse, she went back home and called the police. They again found nothing that could link them directly to Richard, but it was obvious whoever had murdered Teresa had been responsible for this as well. With nothing left to go on, Lieutenant Boydi decided to
Biondi.
I'll get the right eventually. Biondi decided to try something relatively new at the time. Biondi had attended an FBI seminar a few years back, a seminar on psychological profiling, and he put together a profile that matched Richard to a bloody T. Being in the late 70s and having no witness mentioned anyone of color, when asking about suspicious people in the area, Biondi concluded the killer must be white. He also concluded the killer must be schizophrenic, seeing as how the killings were disorganized in the middle of the day, and no real attempt to cover anything up or hide from any witnesses was present throughout. He also assumed the killer had no job, no spells, and no real social life, as the killings took place during regular business hours. It also seemed the killer went all out from the beginning, killing them instantly to ensure control over the ordeal, which suggests the killer had no real interactions with the victims, suggesting very limited social skills. Lastly, Bionni assumed the killer had spent time in a mental facility.
Ding 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 ding.
Oh man.
And yeah, we check off all those boxes.
Yep.
This case is often cited as the gold standard for the disorganized killer. The FBI also likes to take credit for solving this case. They really didn't do anything other than provide the psychological profiling tactic that Biondi and his team used. But even with the perfect profile, not much seemed to move forward with the investigation until Nancy Holden saw the police sketch made from witness testimonies and resembled her old schoolmate. Nancy told her father-in-law, who was a Sacramento police officer, about her encounter with him at the grocery store. And with that, Biondi had a name to the face. And with that name, he found a concealed weapons arrest attached to Richard for a .22, as well as his records from the mental hospital Richard had been in and gotten his schizophrenia diagnosis, along with being labeled as a violent patient with an obsession for blood. He also found the Pyramid Lake incident in his records. Let's just take a second to acknowledge the fact that he was labeled violent and obsessed with blood.
And they still let him go.
And they still let him go.
Shows how little they cared back then, because they really did not give a fuck about mentally unstable people back in the day.
They didn't give a shit.
Nope. They just put them in the corner and shooed them away. With all this information, police went to Richard's address and knocked on the door. There was no answer, but they could hear Richard moving around inside. They didn't have a warrant and didn't want to compromise anything by entering without one. So they decided to straight up pretend to leave. They loudly proclaimed their intentions to leave and return later, made some noise, and quietly waited.
I love this
And it
so
actually
much.
Worked. Holy crap, it worked.
They were just like, all right, no one's home. I guess we'll go. Clunk.
What the fuck?
They just did that and they hid behind bushes.
I want to see that done in cartoons.
It's exactly like what they do in cartoons. And Richard is just sitting there like, alright, I guess they're gone.
He is schizophrenic, so it's, yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Very soon after Richard would leave his apartment with a cardboard box full of a bloody piece of paper, police emerged and ordered Richard to stop. And he threw the box and took off, but he was bashed in the head with the gun by one police officer and fell to the ground. But as the officer bent down to cuff him, Richard began squirming and fighting against the officer, the whole time trying to reach into his jacket for his gun. But Richard was overpowered, and the vampire of Sacramento was in custody.
That's like that horror movie shit where it's like smash him in the head, because the yeah. cop that did that thought he was dead.
Oh, damn.
Like, he just dropped. And then he's like, goes down to investigate. And then Richard just like, starts squirming around, fighting and shit.
Damn.
I heard there was one report of, I don't know if it was that cop, but it was one of the cops that was there. That at first he was just like, I'm going to shoot him. As soon as I see him, I'm going to fucking shoot him in the head. But then he's just like, kind of takes a step back. I'm like, no, that won't make me any better than him.
Yeah.
A cop not wanting to shoot someone? Whoa. Blows my mind.
A different topic for a different day.
Yeah, I guess so.
Not that type of podcast.
Not yet. Probably not. That wouldn't last very long.
Nope.
After the arrest, police obtained a search warrant for Rich's apartment, and it was every bit as gross as you would imagine it to be. Nearly every inch of his apartment was covered in old and fresh blood. Even an innocent loaf of French bread was covered. Just an innocent loaf of garlic bread, and he just smothered it in blood.
Damn.
They found human brain tissue in the fridge, which was more than likely from the baby Richard brought home. Anatomy books were found all throughout the home as well as newspapers with classified ads for dogs all circled. There was also a notebook found with drawings of guns and swastikas, as well as incomprehensible notes in German translation scribbled inside. A page with his signature written 12 times, and on the bottom of the page, Richard had written, "My name is Richard Chase. I am a 01000 computer. I was sent here in the year 10,000. Do with that what you will. The word today was also written on a calendar on the days of both the Wallen and Miroth murders. It had been written on over 40 more dates in the coming year.
Damn.
Yeah. They also found human tissue in the blender.
Oh,
ew. Human tissue that belonged to the baby. Yeah. Yeah. But no, he had like swastikas and shit. Not because he was a Nazi. Not that I'm defending him. But because he fully believed that the Nazis were after him. They were the ones taking his blood. He thought that, like, you know, all those, what do they call them on Supernatural? The Thule Society?
Oh.
The occult Nazis?
Yeah.
The ones with the UFOs and shit? He thought those guys were after him.
Damn.
Yeah, I don't fucking ask me why. I don't know.
He's schizophrenic.
Yeah, dude. I guess there is no why.
Yeah. The man had something wrong in his brain and...
No one tried to fix it. Sad. This is like... If the Joker movie was turned up to 20.
Oh, shit.
Honestly, like...
Yeah.
Dude could have been fine if he got the proper treatment. Like, there's still that little bit in there that you're like, you know, it obviously couldn't all be the schizophrenia, because most schizophrenics aren't violent. They're not murderers at all. They're harmful to themselves and not other people.
Yeah.
So, obviously, there was something else there, too, beyond the schizophrenia. But I'm pretty sure if he got treatment for it early on, might have been okay. But that's also the other part of this, where it's like, was it just going to happen anyway?
Yeah, you never know until he gets help. And
Hopefully
he might have been able to deal with it better, but
maybe.
Because he didn't, people suffered.
Big time. Holy fuck.
Richard would be charged with 6 counts of first-degree murder, and was sentenced to death by the gas chamber after his insanity defense fell through. Though he would not make it to death date of May 8th, 1979, because on December 26th, 1978, Richard would take a handful of antidepressants he had been hoarding after being egged on by other inmates and died of toxic ingestion.
Yeah, once they find out that you're a baby killer, no... Even in a room full of murderers, they all hate you.
Yeah.
Apparently, they also did a thing where they'd piss in jars and then throw the piss at Richard when he'd go past them.
Damn.
Yeah. It's weird to me that the insanity plea didn't work.
Yeah.
What I read from why it didn't work was mostly the calendar dates.
Yeah.
Yes and no.
Premeditated.
Premeditated, yeah. But you also have to think, premeditated what?
Yeah.
Did he know he was murdered? I'm not trying to defend him. Holy fuck, I'm not trying to defend him. I just
trying to add reason to your insanity.
I scratch my head because I'm like, yes and no, I guess.
Yeah.
But whatever, it's not like it really matters. He's gone. Who fucking cares?
True.
My last little bit of information, something I have to share with the world.
Oh no.
Before he took his own life, who fucking gives a shit? Actually, he didn't really stand. Well, no, he stood trial, at least. I don't remember if it was Ray Biondi or if it was a different FBI agent, but he was in, like, the interrogation room with the FBI agent as they were trying to get more out of him. They didn't really get anything useful out of him because while they were, you know, trying to talk to Richard more, he would tell them that the UFO Nazis were the ones doing this, and if they could just get him a radar gun, he could track down the UFOs and bring the Nazis to court to stand trial for what they'd made him do, as well as reaching into his pockets and pulling out 2 handfuls of mac and cheese and handing them to the FBI, saying that they're poisoning him. I could just imagine, be like, Richard, okay, so why'd you do this? It was the Nazis! If you give me a radar gun, I can find him. Also, here, take this.
Pocket mac and cheese.
Pocket mac and cheese. Why? They're poisoning it. I swear.
I can't eat it. It's gonna be my favorite food.
Ravioli, ravioli. What's in the pocket-oli?
Oh, man. Yeah, that concludes Richard Chase.
That concludes Richard Chase. And holy shit, I'm sorry I forgot to mention this in the beginning of the episode again. I was supposed to mention this at the beginning of episode one. But I used two sources for this, two main sources. Sorry that this is the beginning. I will put it in the show notes, and next series that I do with sources, I'll make sure I cite it at the beginning of the first episode.
Yeah.
But the sources I used were The Dracula Killer. I don't remember the full title off the top of my head, but The Dracula Killer by Ray Biondi. He wrote the book. It's the quote-unquote definitive book. I couldn't actually get it because I can only buy it off Amazon for like $50.
Damn.
So I just kind of scoured the internet trying to find little bits and pieces of it. So the other book that I used was the chapter on Richard Chase in The Last Book on the Left by The Last Podcast on the Left.
Yeah.
Which they also used his book as a source, so, you know.
Nice.
So yeah, that was Richard Chase. Might be one of the most fucked up things we ever describe. After this, we're going to probably do another creepypasta. I know, we just did a creepypasta two episodes ago. But as chance would have it, the only script that I could start to write was the script on Richard Ramirez. So we're going to do him after next week's creepypasta. I'm sorry, I know. I have three other ones lined up. Two or three unsolved mystery ones. Three unsolved mystery ones. I was going to do one of those next, but the script just wasn't coming to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where it just... I could be wrong. So if after the next creepypasta one, it actually is an unsolved mystery one, you're welcome. But it might just be Richard Ramirez.
Yeah.
Back to back Richard.
No. Not the Richards. Two Richards.
We'll call him Richie.
Don't call him Richie.
Richie Ramirez. That was apparently his nickname.
Really?
Yeah. Little Richie.
Of course.
That's a terrible name for that guy. Okay. But thank you all for listening. I'm sorry if either of these were a little off, like I said at the beginning of this episode. We haven't done this for a month.
Yeah.
So
it's been a while.
But I think these turned out pretty good.
Yeah, they did.
Thank you all for listening. As always, if you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at Hecate_podcast. We put out when we release episodes and small little things here and there if you want to follow us.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd like to contact us for any reason, you can DM us there, or you can email us at hecatesdoorwaypod@gmail.com. We have a Patreon. If you would like to donate, that would be really cool.
You don't have to, but if you want to, if you have extra change.
Yeah, it's just $1 right now. We have a couple things in mind we might do later, but for right now, it's just $1.
Yeah.
I'll put all those in the show notes. Make sure to rate us 5 stars only.
5 stars.
We don't accept 4, 3, 2, 1, or 0. I will send it back.
I don't think we can take 0.
0 is a no rating. If you don't rate,
what else could we have done?
What more do you want? Right. I read the worst shit I've ever read.
I don't know. Oh, no, yeah.
The most fucked up shit. Maybe not the worst as in the worst written. I've read some... Have you listened to the creepypasta episodes? Those are terrible.
Yep.
But at least those are fun. Alright, well, be ready for the next one. I know, back-to-back creepypasta, back-to-back Richard. That's all we do now. We're the Creepypasta Richard podcast.
Just
nothing but creepypastas and Richards.
We don't know what the next Richard is. We'll figure it out.
Dick. Can we call him Dick Ramirez?
Yes.
Dick Ramirez.
Good one.
Alright, that's enough. Thank you all so much.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for staying tuned through all of this.
Oh my god, yeah. Okay, if you made it to the end, I will send you one of my stickers. I have a shitload of stickers. You know what? If you made it to the end of this episode,
send them a bunch of stickers.
DM me on Twitter or email us saying you made it to the end. And you want one of my stickers. I have horror stickers. I have satanic stickers. I have show stickers.
You have a bunch
of stickers. I will mail you one if you made it to the end.
Yeah, definitely.
I'd be so sad when no one emails.
You know,
no one listened to the end.
No one ever does.
Alright. Thank you all for listening.
Hail Satan!
Hope you have a blessed day and a blessed evening and a blessed night.